We're going to go to side two of this broadcast. It's number 623, November 14th, 1983. I may say next week is the anniversary, less one night, of the assassination of John Kennedy, but don't expect me to do a whole hour on it. Everything I do has to do with the people who killed John Kennedy. It goes back to those days. So in honor of John Kennedy, it's a continuous expose. As I said many times, we don't need a particular nine. Now, when the U.S. Army came in to Grenada, they were in charge of this whole operation. And that's a similarity to Jonestown. It was a Defense Department operation that took the bodies to Dover, Delaware, and the Defense Department made the decision, no newsmen, nobody for 2 days, nobody can see what we could do. And yet the gentleman who arrested Mr. Bishop, the prime minister, he was at the hospital that day before it was bombed. Mr. Schoon was in touch with the hospital that day. The Americans evidently knew what they were bombing. They bombed it, and then they ordered dispose of it, and the bodies are missing. Now, there's no account of where they are any more than we know who the 80 Americans were on the airplane flying over Korean Airline with Larry McDonald. There are questions to ask. There aren't many answers coming along. I also made a chronology of what was happening just before the Grenada invasion. An interesting thing that I went back and cross-filed was what I had on the air 2 weeks ago. The speech of Henry Gonzalez before Congress, September the 15th, 1983. And I took about 8 or 10 key sentences that he had in that speech that we shared on the air. And each one of them applies to the exact story of Grenada and how Grenada fell down, and how he referred to Henry Kissinger and Carrington Associates as a hired gun. And he asked the question, this is just 1 month before the planned invasion of the island, does the State Department lease out its own State Department to Kissinger Carrington Association? And that's interesting because Mr. Carrington was the gentleman from Great Britain who went down to Barbados to set up the organization in 1980 that would get rid of Mr. Bishop when Bishop was elected in 1979. So our State Department is indeed contracted out. And William Clark, the National Security Advisor, was the person that hired Henry Kissinger, according to Representative Gonzalez, in August 1983 to be on the Kissinger Commission in Central America. And William Clark is the person that Maurice Bishop went to see in June 1980. Now, he went to him in 1980. Nobody has an embassy there. We wouldn't recognize him. We wanted to starve him out. He's a Marxist. We can't have a Marxist anywhere on the planet Earth. Mr. Bishop went to see William Clark in June of 1980. And in August, Clark assigns Henry Kissinger to Central America. Thank you, Mr. Bishop, and up yours. Come on in, Henry. We got a problem on our hands. Okay, in comes Henry and his business partner, Mr. Carrington, who Representative Gonzalez wants to investigate. They rub their two hands together like a match and make the world safe for organized crime and watch and see. I heard one story. They're making the island safe for Mr. Robert Vesco. But with Mr. Gary, you know, running and being able to come back and run for elections, as I say, the maitre d' of a nightclub who ran it like Batista ran Cuba all those years before Fidel Castro came in. It makes one more island safe for the Vescos and the organized crime syndicates, and then the Kissinger-Carrington gang can bring in the hashish from Lebanon and from their pal, the Jamals, and all over the world and make one more island safe for dope and drug traffic. That's wherever Henry goes, whether it's Iran or Southeast Asia or Bolivia or Pakistan, Middle East, the drugs flow into the United States. Kissinger and Carrington Associates. Check out what happens to that island now. So I did a chronology of what took place when Mr. Bishop was first taken away and removed, and then up to the time he was killed, the planned invasion, how Ronald Reagan planned it for a long time, and the excuses he made, and the tragedy of Mr. Bishop visiting Mr. Clark. Now, there's an example, a perfect example of what I'm trying to say about somebody being around Larry Flynt like Gordon Novell and Mitchell Werbel. If I were Bishop, I would no more go to William Clark. I would tell the United Nations what they did to Allende. I would list the 77 countries, the military dictatorships, the people that have been murdered to put the current people into power, the murder of Sadat, the murder of the president of South Korea. This was before Aquino was killed, the John Kennedy, the overthrow of in Chile. I would present to the world court of some kind how the murders are swinging in Washington and how they're escalating their murders. I wouldn't ask William Clark for a favor. With a track record like that, you don't go ask them for a favor. By the time he walks out the door, they have a circle on his coat and it's marked with a target. And it's just that simple. You don't ask for favors. It's like this last week, Coretta King had to cancel speech because there was a death threat on her life. Jesse Jackson asked for protection because there was a death threat on his life. Where were Coretta King and Jesse Jackson when Martin Luther King was murdered? Where were they when the House Select Committee was investigating their worker, Robert Byron Watson? Where were these people? Or Andrew Young, he's not threatened because he plays their game with them down the line. But the minute they step out and get a little too rambunctious or get a Martin Luther King day, then she can't go public anymore. Her life's in danger. Well, they asked for it because they didn't help the researchers. They haven't helped us. They haven't written the introduction to a book. They've never picked up a phone and wanted to know who killed Martin. So what makes Jesse Jackson think he's safe? He's just a fool. He's like the Jews that walked into the oven at Auschwitz. They saw their tailor go and their shoemaker go, and then next it was the Jewish butcher, and then it was the banker. What made the banker think that he was any safer? It's like the movie the Fizi Contini's in Italy, this wealthy family of Jewish people who let the poor Jews who can't go to the colleges and schools be educated play tennis in their home because they have their own private tennis court and you can't use the tennis courts in Italy because the Nazis are there and you're Jewish. So finally, in the end of the movie, if you didn't see it, and if ever it comes around, see it, the Fizi Contini's are put on the wagons and trains and sent to be burned in the same ovens as the people that they let use their tennis courts. The mistake of Bishop with a track record of the United States is you don't go up there and ask for mercy at all. You just simply tell the world what's going on and you don't mingle with these people and you don't mess around with any part of them because they're death incorporated, murder incorporated, and you stay away from them. If they come and get you, it's one thing, but you don't ask them for favors. That's the way I feel. If they want to come and get me, I'm not inviting them, but I wouldn't mingle with the likes of these people. And I stay far away, and I don't want to have anything to do with them. It taints anything I think or feel, and I feel very strongly about that. And the same way with Maurice Bishop, why should you go to Washington and ask William Clark? Ask William Clark about Helene von Damm in Austria, what she's doing in Vienna, or her German husband down at La Paz, Bolivia, and the death squads in Bolivia. And Mr. Maurice Bishop would know that he'd be in a coffin. It was June when he was there, and by October he's dead. Why doesn't he do a little investigative work? These heads of states are so busy, you know, with some things that are going on, and you need a little researcher on the side. Well, I did an outline of the history of Grenada this week. As I say, I went through every aspect that I want to write about. The early Grenada from 1951, when Sir Eric Gary, G-A-I-R-Y, he started as a maitre d' at the Evening Palace nightclub in 1951, took over the Grenada Labor Party, and he had this death goon squad, the secret police called the Mongoose Gang. They're still going. Mr. Bishop, Maurice Bishop, was beaten up by them, and Maurice Bishop's father was murdered by these police in demonstrations. There were anti-Gary demonstrations in 1974. That's the same year that London and Tim Stone and Stanford Research were funding gang raider rent Guyana for Jim Jones and his money from the primate sales to take these people down there and drug them out of their heads and then eventually to kill 914. Well, Sir Eric Gary was a nightclub maitre d' when he was head of the Labor Party in 1951, the height of Batiste in Cuba. Castro comes in shortly after, but down in this island was Mr. Gary, was still British. And by 1973, he still has his Mongoose goon squad, death squad. They beat up Mr. Bishop, and then his father, as I say, was murdered by the police. They named a civic building the jail of the city hall after his father, and that's where Maurice Bishop was taken off when he was to be murdered. Demonstrations in 1974. Where is Sir Eric Gehry? I read in the New York Times this week that he can run for office again back in Grenada. That's the little jewel of a democracy that we're so proud of. Okay? Then I did some more outlining on Peter Byrne and his activities with Mr. Brzezinski and the administration when Jimmy Carter was in, when Jonestown was at its height. Interesting, when after Bishop was elected in March 17, 1979, Mr. Gehry goes in 1979 to Peter Byrne. Peter Byrne is the man who was on Jimmy Carter's cabinet position, helped with the drug program and with mental health and so forth. He's the man with that background I've explained to you from Agent Orange and the AID in Vietnam with the special forces. And then he works in the White House with Mr. Keogh, with the White House plumbers and Richard Nixon, K-E-O-G-H, Mr. Keogh, part of the Nixon gang. Then he's with Jimmy Carter and puts Jimmy Carter in for as a front for Brzezinski and Nelson Rockefeller and the Trilateral. He bridges both administrations, the Nixon administration, Peter Byrne does, and then the Jimmy Carter. Then he goes on to the United Nations in a water control group. It's called the UN Water and group, but his offices are down in Washington, D.C., where he works with the World Bank. And I mentioned last week that Lawrence Mann of Jonestown, the liaison of Guyana to Washington, D.C., who lived with the alleged Mata Hari, the two of them were murdered the day after the invasion of Grenada. They were both involved with Jonestown. Well, Mr. Mann worked in Washington, D.C. at the World Bank the same time that Peter Byrne had his offices in Washington, D.C., and the Carter administration was behind and supported the entire Jonestown operation and covered it up 100% after 914 deaths. The Birch Society and the far right keep crying about the Soviet Union and the airplane that went down over there. Why don't they check out, in terms of hypocrisy, the 914 deaths and the material in Washington that conceals those American citizens also? There were 86 on the other plane and 914 in Guyana. So Peter Byrne worked in Washington, D.C. His cover was the UN Water Group, and he worked with the World Bank in Washington, D.C. at the same time that Lawrence Mann was at the World Bank, and he was the liaison of Guyana to Washington, D.C. And the day after Grenada's overthrown, Mann and his Mata Hari, his woman from Jonestown, that she had several names that she used, they're both dead, and I mentioned those last week. So as soon as Bishop is in, the plans were made to kill him. He gave a speech in Grenada. There was a bomb in the park that injured a lot of people there. It's in June of 1980 at the Queen's Park where Maurice Bishop was talking, and they were having speeches, and they had gotten Gehry out. He had been in government just a short while. And Sir Eric Gehry had gone to the United Nations, to Peter Byrne, and he went to Jimmy Carter, and he says, help me get rid of this Maurice Bishop. Here's this refined, intelligent lawyer from London who now has the government in Grenada, and here's Sir Eric Gehry from the Moonshine Nightclub, or you have what, with the Goon Squad. And when he loses that, when there's this coup and the people kick him out, he goes to Peter Byrne, the same Byrne whose father and he are running the medical school on Grenada, and says, help me. And Peter Byrne refers him to Mr. Califano, who, working for Jimmy Carter, is now head of health, education, and welfare. But Mr. Califano was in the Pentagon long before that. Mr. Califano worked with Alexander Haig at the time of the Bay of Pigs. He was the assistant to the Secretary of the Defense Department. He worked with Henry Kissinger. He worked with Fritz Kramer, the advisor, the Army's chief of staff. Mr. Califano takes a role from working with the Army to going to, under the other administrations, when Kennedy was murdered and the Bay of Pigs people were involved in killing Kennedy, Califano works for Jimmy Carter at Health, Education, and Welfare. And lo and behold, who shows up but this fellow from Granada who's been kicked out, who goes to Califano and Peter Byrne and says, hey, get that bishop out of the way. Now, we've got this medical school set up with 700 people. George Bush was the CIA director when the medical school was set up. Peter Byrne goes down there to teach. His father is the director of the medical school. This goon squad has been kicked out. Sir Eric Geary, they've been kicked out. The Mongoose Group. He goes right to the UN where Peter Byrne is, whose offices are in Washington with the World Bank, with Mr. Mann from Guyana. I didn't say it's the same office building, but the same organization, and both working for this group. And Geary says, help me get out. And sure enough, Mr. Carrington and Mr. Kissinger go right to Barbados to set up an organization that will be the excuse to overthrow the island and make it safe for the Catholic Church that had their masses yesterday and for the people on the island, not the native population necessarily, a lot of them, but the powers that be, Kissinger and Carrington, and as I say, Bishop, Mr. Maurice Bishop has visited Clark, who appoints Henry Kissinger, and the wheels are rolling. Now, Bishop had warned at rallies when they got Geary out, they had rallies at the park, and he had several speeches, and I have copies of those, one in March 13th, 1980, 1 year after he was in. He came in March 1979. 30,000 people were gathered and proclaimed. You know, they were satisfied with him. In fact, they still like him. He had a lot of charisma. And those people aren't being interviewed, you notice, on the news and TV. In June 1980, he gave a speech at the park when that bomb went out, as I mentioned earlier. These people, these mercenaries, and those are the mercenaries of the Nugent Hand, the anti-Castro Cubans, the Michael Townleys that killed Orlando Letelier and Ronnie Moffat when Bush was director of the CIA and Allende down, helped with Allende and these many murders. I had some of them there last week. He said America's imperialist, and there's going to be intervention. They're going to take over what we're doing. And that's what he said in 1980, 3 years ago. But the machinery was already set up now to move him out within 3 years. In August of 1980, he told the U.S. president, Grenada is importing problems for me. And they responded by saying that Grenada's importing violence and torture, and that it's a very dangerous island and it's threatening the security of the United States. And he warned about the mercenaries and the cruelty of the people that are bombing 80 people in a park and so forth and so on. So while he's trying to make the go of the government, the unemployment's gone from 40% to 14%. He's trying to get some education and health plans. Mr. Bishop was a target from the day that he got Mr. Geary out. And Bishop is dead and Geary is in. Now, in March of this year, Ronald Reagan gave a speech. March in 1983, Grenada is jeopardizing the national security of the United States. And then he escalates that with a picture of the map, that airport map, and the dangers of the map. Well, it turned out it wasn't any danger at all. And the man who built it said there is nothing at all to indicate that that airport is a danger to the United States. Now, the medical school is the part that interests me because of the secrecy that went on in the island. There was obviously described as the biggest secret news blackout in the history of the United States. You're talking about an island of 100,000 people. You have Jeffrey and Peter Byrne, the two doctors, going back and forth with communications to the United States. They found it safe enough to put a medical school with 700 Americans, or mostly Americans, going to college on the island. How much terrorism or damage was happening there? They could put that medical school on any island they wanted, and it was plunked down there. They wouldn't send an ambassador down there. Jimmy Carter had an ambassador that went two times. Now, listen to the inconsistency of this. He is the president of the United States 4 years, is a medical school run by his cabinet member and his cabinet member's wife. Mary Byrne and Peter Byrne allegedly were the brains behind picking Jimmy Carter. Of course, they were the front for the trilateral and Brzezinski. But Peter Byrne, he's on the cabinet of Jimmy Carter. He flies down there all the time to the school. His father runs a school of 700 Americans. Would you think that Jimmy Carter would find it sufficient to send an ambassador there just to know how Peter's family is doing, or Mary's family, or if there's Russians or Libyans, or if Castro's going to take the island over. Wouldn't you think that Jimmy Carter would have some interest with his direct cabinet people that have handpicked him for president, who are running a medical school, and he has no ambassador down there and won't send one? Just two trips. And then when Ronald Reagan is president, he has none. So this, for 2 days, the Pentagon said yes. The admiral said yes. We said nobody can enter this island, anyone, for 2 days. And after that, it turned out that everything they said, every news story they gave, was a massive lie. Well, why would the president, of time of re-election, with all the other scandals going around him, with the Reagan Carter debate papers, the Johnny Carson papers, the Frank Sinatra, the Paul Laxalt, the mob connections, the Alfred Bloomingdale connection, all these things coming down around this man, why in the world would he want to put one more thing in his stumbling block to not allow them to come to that island? Now, one, the secrecy was a clue, and the hospital, the medical school run by the Burns, was another clue to me. Now, after 2 days of this news blackout, Barbados, that had 400 newsmen waiting there for a story, were blacked out. I have articles that the Barbados news kept a lie. They'd say, we're going to have a press conference in the afternoon. It didn't happen. We'll have one in the evening. It didn't happen. The Barbados held the line of the press. And after the second day, press could come to Grenada for the day on specific places that they could see, then were flown back to Barbados. We are told if you visit the Soviet Union, you can only go to certain places. You're not at liberty to go all over. They select where you go. Tell me, what is the difference between the Soviet Union and the United States when you take people from Barbados and you handpick who you take? And they photographed everything of the medical school, kissing the ground, American arrival and all that. But nobody can be there, and they selected where they could go. One newsman from Barbados did get to that bombed-out hospital, told it to McLean in Canada, and 6 days later, after the president said there's no casualties, no civilian casualties on the island, they say bombs fell on a hospital, on a mental hospital, and there were as many as possibly 50 dead, and they didn't explain where the other 130 are. And so there was a secrecy that there had to be a reason, and the first target was the mental hospital. They landed in the morning. They began their invasion of the island, and by 2 o'clock, 4 bombs had fallen on the mental hospital. There was this total news blackout, and then October 31st, they start to let the news on in the present with no civilian casualties. Now, I started different file folders the first day, how the hospital was bombed, and they didn't admit that we dropped not one bomb by mistake, but 4 over there. Then 6 days later, they admit, yes, there's a mental hospital, and we bombed it because the story broke in Canada. The next point is that the heads of the hospital, the ones who were interviewed, said that they were told by the government officials, release the patients and arm them, lock some up, lock the men up, lock these people up, release others, give them weapons, post them in the vicinity of the building, and they become part of the army. What kind of a mental hospital is it where the patients get the guns and become the army over there? And then some of the victims immediately were cremated, the coroner said, and some were buried on the spot. And the hospital was right at the edge of the fort, right at the fort, 200 yards from the government's mansion. Mr. Schoon, who was rescued by the United States government and was kept in custody of the U.S. government, was in their custody at the time when the Army gave the Navy the orders, go and bomb that place, and they bombed the mental hospital, and they had been over it with helicopters earlier in the day. According to the nurse, they were flying over there constantly. Now, General Hudson, H-U-D-S-O-N, Hudson Aston, A-U-S-T-O-N, he was the man who had seized control of the island originally on October the 19th. One story is that he called the hospital himself and said, lock up all the males and then report for duty. So the people in charge of the mentally sick were to lock them up and report for duty, and he was on the USS Guam at the time, okay? Now, there's another article that says Judge Austin came to the hospital himself, that it was important that he be there, so that Mr. Austin, the man in charge of Mr. Maurice Bishop, and also Mr. Schoon, who became the head of Grenada after the invasion, were involved, actually involved in what was to happen at the hospital, and they warned the personnel to get out. Now, in Jonestown, there were passports for 1,200 people. There were 914 dead. There were members of Congress that testified, and articles written that 120 of the hard killers got away, including the yacht that belonged to Jim Jones that went to Barbados. So in this story of the Bonnie count and the discrepancies in the Bonnie count, there are similarities to Jonestown and also in the people telling the officials running it what to do. In other words, the people that had those patients locked up that had to be wiped out were protected and didn't die. They were warned, some were told to go home. Now, the U.S. military, when Larry Speaks was asked about, the military was asked, what about the hospital? They said they didn't know what the building was, even though it was under surveillance, and they said they didn't go in because they didn't hear any sound. Well, if the personnel were reported up for duty and they were saved, what kind of sounds would you want? You might listen for a sniper, as I mentioned earlier. You might look to see if somebody's dying in there. You might look to see what it was you bombed, but they didn't want to. And one of the explanations was the hospital is empty because they moved to another house. What house has 100 mental patients in Barbados? I'd like to know if all those people were killed or they're in some other house. Then another version was that the Grenadians are buried on the spot. The reason they didn't know what it was is that they buried them the moment they were dead. They don't have funerals. Do they have families in Barbados, in Grenada rather, or are they taken like Jonestown? And didn't the people, many of them that were dead, didn't match the passports? Who in the world was taken to this hospital in Grenada, and what was the hurry? Didn't the families have the right to any funeral? Didn't they have services? They're Catholic and Anglicans, and they have services, and if a member of the family is legitimately mentally sick and is on an army base or for whatever mental hospital, they weren't taken to the families. With a population of 180, they could identify them by name. So there was this explanation that they had to be buried right on the spot or right away, and only 6 days later admitted it, then by the Marines saying, we didn't go in the site. I see no evil, I hear no evil. I didn't go in there, so I don't know what was there. That's absolutely impossible that you take an island, go way off in the woods, and you don't even look at the building. Then Larry Speaks gave a press conference for Ronald Reagan and said there's a religious custom on the island. You bury people as soon as they die. Then he retracted that and said a few days later, no, it's not a religious custom because these were Catholics and Anglicans. But the curiosity of the Americans, even a military duty, in case one person was alive, is outrageous, and particularly since it was on an airstrip and they were supposed to be protecting the airstrips. Now, November the 7th, 1983, 100 bodies were found in a mass grave, and then later an American official who went with a truck driver asked them to please help him dig up the grave, and he says that he went there and that they asked him to remove the bodies from the mass grave. And then the next story, first was 100 or 200 people, then the next story was there's no such grave, it didn't exist. Then there was another story that they were thrown into the sea, the bodies were thrown into the sea. So were there 200 people? There were about 68 that were gunned down in the crowd when Maurice Bishop was killed. Were 100 killed? The president says no civilians. And that's just one of the lies. But see, the proximity to Jonestown is very important because Jonestown flew people to hospitals around those islands, broken arms or broken legs or for whatever purposes, and got them away from there. The New York Times has a full-page article this last Sunday, I think it was November the 6th, on all the lies and contradictions of the Reagan administration. And I'll detail some of them with you because the hour is up now. We just have 1 minute to go on this program. I'll do more on the medical school and more in the hospital, but I'm convinced that because of the discrepancies in the hospital story and the massive bombing and the importance it was to the people who kidnapped Maurice Bishop and who run the government now, that they were in touch with that hospital at that time, that that hospital had more importance, just as Jonestown had, to the necessity for the secrecy. The plan to take the island was done as early as 1979 when Bishop won. But the secrecy of getting rid of those bodies had to be done because a new government was in and they were going to put in the old goon squad and clean out this hospital. Well, that's all the time we have. We'll do more on that and other news next week. This is Mae Brussel, and it's KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove. You behave yourselves, and I'll be back with you next week.